Northside Pie. You know it don't stop. With bricks to the business of everything that's high. Call it Ringside Pie. You know it don't stop. With the flicks to the business of everything that's high. Welcome to Ringside Pie with Kia Stevens, Marty Elias, and Dale Rutledge.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. It's time to get rowdy right here. On Ringside Pop, I am your host, Dale Rutledge, and we have got a very special episode for you today. We're calling it The Adventures of PJ Black. That is because we just might have PJ Black. But first, before we get to the man of honor, let's get to my co-host. We have the lovely, as always, Kia Stevens. How you doing?
Doing okay. Thank you. Thank you.
How's your week been?
It was good. It was awesome. Yes, did some wrestling, did some binge watching. I was like,
what are you watching?
Everything in one. I'm rewatching Grey's Anatomy for some reason.
What?
Oh my God. It's the weirdest thing. It was like on Lifetime, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to rewatch that.
You know what I need? A lot of this. I don't think I made it through the first time, so good on you. Also in studio, as always, we've got Marty Elias. How's it going over there, Marty?
All right. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Yeah. Good to see you. How's your week been?
It was great. You know, a lot of networking and working with some clothing line out in New York.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Are you getting your own Kiss wardrobe?
Right.
A little bit, no. Putting some stuff together with a brand, and I'll name a future legend, out of New York, and doing some stuff like that. And then actually confirmed working with Chris Jericho on October 24th.
I've heard of him.
Cool guy. Hey, Chris, by the way, man, take care. Dude, you're there in... with Hurricane Irma, dude, please be safe.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, everyone down there. We got a lot of people down there in Florida. Yeah. Wrestling has a lot of people in Florida.
Oh, my
please
gosh.
Please be safe.
Yeah, and then with Chris, you know, texting with him and stuff, he's actually staying there. So he's in Tampa right now, so him and his family. So, October 24th, we're working the Loudwire Award Show. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be rocking. So if you're a metal guy or a metal girl, there you go.
Rock on!
Yeah.
Wait, so your line is called Future Legend?
No, I'm actually working with a company called Future Legend.
Oh, I'm going to tell Charlie and Melissa. She's like, girl, somebody didn't spell your name.
It's not exclusive. I'm sure there's many Future Legends.
I'm just starting trouble. Like when you're
Future
kid,
Legend
you're
like, apparel.
Someone's going to hit you. You're going to hit them back.
You know what I heard? And our special guest today is the former Lucha Underground Trios Champion, FCW Heavyweight Champion, GFW King of the Mountain, and multi-time WWE Tag Team Champion, South Africa's own Daredevil, PJ Black.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Welcome to the show.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for having me, Marty.
No problem.
So let's start off first with your entry. I think that a lot of people are curious what's going on with you. First of all... what happened? Let's talk about that.
Okay, I jumped this building.
And it's I like that you start so casual. So I'm jumping a building, obviously. It's a Tuesday.
Yeah. I was actually on my way to the airport to fly back to the U.S. after the South African tour.
Okay.
And I was like, let me get one more in. I got like five or six in the week, let me get one more in. And that's when it happened. I mean, people think the parachute didn't open. The parachute opened fine. The problem is with jumping a solid object, like a building. When the parachute opens, it has to open perfect, so you fly away from the building. So I guess it opened, my body position must have been off, so it opened like slightly to the left or right, I don't even remember, and there was a satellite dish right there, and I hit it, grabbed my brakes, and I flipped myself around, I kicked off the wall, that's where I broke my leg, and I tore a piece of my finger off.
Ooh. I saw that, I didn't want to say nothing, but yeah. I saw that.
They managed to save it, they sewed it back on. And
what, did you hold on to it? How did it, what happened?
Yeah, I just... kept it in my hand to the
hospital.
My
God.
Hardcore.
You are Daredevil. So wait, so this was in, where in South Africa was this?
In South Africa, in Johannesburg.
It was in a Johannesburg,
yeah. Okay. Have you guys ever seen that movie Chappie?
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I love
yes.
Chappie.
That was the building I jumped.
Oh,
wow. The driverless building?
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Yep. So you'd already done four or five that week, though?
Yeah, possibly more. I've done quite a few.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But you wanted to get one more in.
One more in, on my way to the airport, and then... yeah.
Wow. Now, had anything like that happened to you before while doing that?
About a year ago, same place. I broke both my legs.
Oh, my God.
But before that, in my 35-year career, I started contact sports when I was 7 years old. I've never been injured. Wow. So the last 2 years have been rough. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe my bones are getting brittle or something. I don't know.
Maybe just avoid that building.
Maybe. I think the universe is trying to tell me something.
One more building. I blame wrestling fans. they're always chanting, yeah. One more time.
Yeah. One more match.
That's
one more
match. See what you guys did to your boy?
That's the soundtrack he was listening
Shame
to.
On you.
Do you listen to music or anything? Or what do you, just like be out there with you and the obstacle?
It depends. Jumping is kind of like a forced meditation, if you will, because like, you know, you're standing on top and you're looking down and you're like, you don't think about like the bills you have to pay. You don't think about what you have to do tomorrow. I wasn't thinking about my flight I had to catch. I wasn't thinking about anything. You're like completely in the moment, like in that zone. It's like it forces you to be in that state, which that's what I like. You know, like I'm scared when I stand there. I'm scared. I promise you, I'm super scared. But once I land, it's like the most amazing feeling when you've conquered that fear.
Right.
And you learn something. Every time I learn something about myself, about life, about being safe.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. What did you learn about hitting the building?
Oh, man. Not to do tricks off a building. It was so weird. I hit the building, too, and I had so much... I'll show you guys a picture of the building too. So like it was window, stone. Like every floor was different. Like if I had gone through a window, I would have not be here right now. So I was very lucky to hit that satellite dish, in a way. But I managed to fly down. I landed exactly where I wanted to land. I knew my leg was broken, so I kind of landed on one leg and I just kind of rolled. And I was like, "Yep, you guys better take me to the hospital now."
Oh my god! And here's my finger.
Right. Yeah, right. Somebody reschedule my flight.
Yeah. It was like the next day, the pain was pretty bad.
Yeah.
They actually injected me with morphine into my spine. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh my God.
I mean, that felt good, but like once that wore off, it was so painful. Oh my God.
So did you break your actual, what did you actually break?
I broke all the bones in my ankle, tore all the ligaments. They basically reconstructed the whole thing. I have two titanium plates they put in. So the heel bone is like this and your foot is like this and there's a ligament that goes through that holds everything together. It's called a deltoid ligament, and that's like the big one. And that, she said it snapped like a few weeks ago. She's like, how are you even walking?
Oh,
so I guess it must have been weakened from the other jumps, and then this one just like kind of like shattered all the other bones.
Oh my God.
Did wrestling have anything to do with that?
I think so. She also, the doctor told me, she's like, you know you have arthritis, right? I was like, no. I blame wrestling for that.
Yeah.
That probably is wrestling blamable.
But I mean, if I could go back, I wouldn't change a thing.
Well, yeah. Did they say what your foot is going to be able to do after it heals?
I mean, it's never going to be 100%. We know that. But I mean, I'm going to try to be as good as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't skip like rehab days. I go every single day. I do rehabilitation 2-3 times a week. I do the cryo chamber. I started doing the hyperbaric, the oxygen chamber. That helps a lot, actually.
Really? What does that do?
Electrotherapy, stem cell therapy. I'm doing a little documentary right now. I'm recording all this stuff that I'm going through.
Huh.
Kind of hopefully making like a Rocky-like comeback video.
Yeah. These are the steps that you take to get back to the place.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's amazing, like the technology right now. Like stem cells, a few years ago, it wasn't even a thing in the U.S. Like all the NFL, all the quarterbacks would fly to Europe to get it done. And finally, like... You know, like LA, everything's a gray area here. It's like technically still not legal here, but like the doctors do it anyway.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like marijuana.
Pretty much. That's actually helped a lot too. Like
the
CBD stuff for my pain, it's helped a lot.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff on TV about it, just different things.
It's amazing. Like I've started doing some research about it too, because I never used to believe in it, but like it's helped me so much. It's unreal.
You know, that's so cool to hear, because the fact that, I know that this country, and you know, I got. You know, drug into it too, you know, with the opioids and everything else that happens, you know, prescription pills, things of that nature. But then when there's an alternative, you know, and it works, you know, it's something, you know, to hear like somebody you say that, because, you know, more times than not, you know, with wrestling and things of that nature, you know, you have a tendency to kind of go that other way. But then if there's something new and conventional, then
totally
it works.
And I actually saw some of the NFL guys actually funding the study themselves. They think that the CBD helps for concussions.
Oh, interesting.
So like a lot of NFL guys would take the capsules before training and big games.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're still doing research, but obviously it's looking pretty good right now, and it's something I'm going to definitely try out. You know, like, I mean, CBD doesn't make you high or anything.
Right. No, it comes from the male plant. It has no THC.
Something, something like that. You probably know better than me.
I have topical stuff to CBD. Get my CBD out. Yeah. And rub the male on me.
Well, a lot of times that stuff isn't like it's illegal because it's worse for you. It's illegal because they haven't figured out how to make money off of it yet.
Exactly.
You
know what I mean? Exactly. So it's not, very true. Yes.
You know.
Well, as soon as all those studies came out, the big pharma companies, the government actually made it a Schedule I drug.
Oh, interesting.
Just CBD, by the way, which is like, I was like,
well, that's different because it doesn't give you it's not like THC. Does it make you high?
Make you high at all? I know, but they want to make money off it, so they want to regulate it. And stuff.
Why wouldn't they want to make money off it like they do everything else?
Yeah, sounds about right. So, what's the craziest thing that you've done then?
That's a tough question.
I bet.
I've done so many crazy things. It also depends because, like, some of the stuff I do is pretty normal to me, and other people go like, "What? You're freaking nuts," and the other way around, you know. So it really depends. It's a, I guess that question's relative in so many ways.
Is there something that's like on your list to do that you're like, I don't know if I can do it, or I don't know, you know, I want to get to that point where I'm brave enough to dot dot dot.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much advancements in the sport of wingsuit base jumping right now.
Oh yeah,
that's something that I'm looking forward to. I don't know if you guys can remember, like in 98, 99, the X Games, the main event was always the sky surfing. I feel like wingsuiting 5 years from now will be the biggest sport on the planet. Because they started doing like races, like the wingsuit races.
I've seen that on YouTube. Yeah. It's so
like,
dope.
It's basically like Formula One racing, but like in a 3D space.
But yeah, with like no protection except for a helmet.
Exactly. Yeah. And I feel like that's going to be a big sport. So that's what I'm kind of training for. So that's what I really want to do.
Interesting.
You know, my whole family is like, you're going to stop jumping now, right? And I'm like,
So that's a big sport right now.
It is pretty big right now, but like it's a pretty new sport. I think 5 years from now, it'll be really big.
Who's your biggest competitor in that sport?
Oh, there's so many. Sam Hardy. This British guy, Jeb Corliss, that's probably the most famous base jumper that people know. He's the GoPro athlete.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, I still have a way to go till I get to that level, but...
So you've done it already, though?
Oh, yeah. Okay. If you go on my Instagram, PJ450, there's a bunch of my wingsuit flights and base jumps and all kinds of stuff on there.
It looks cool. There's nothing closer to being, like, a superhero, I feel, than that.
Exactly. If you ask any kid, like, hey, if you can have any superpower in the world, what would it be?
Like 90%.
90% would say flying. Yeah. And that's exactly what it feels like. That's the most amazing feeling. And it gets better every time.
The other ones are just, like, future peeping Toms who want to be invisible.
Yeah, right. That's the other 5%.
You know, when you're doing this stuff, what's the rush? You know, because I know, you know, being in front of a crowd and everything, it's such a great rush and doing other stuff. But when you're actually in the air flying, I mean, what's that rush? The adrenaline.
You know, like, when I started doing it, it used to be all about the adrenaline. Like, now it's more like a meditation for me. Like, it really, like, calms me down in a weird way. I know it sounds weird, but, like, it's like I said, it's like a forced meditation. Like, I don't think of anything. For like, when you jump out of a plane, a normal skydive usually lasts 60 seconds. In a wingsuit, you can get 3 or 4 minutes.
Wow.
And it's like just 3 or 4 minutes flying through the sky with your friends. It's like, it's amazing. And you see birds all the time. And I fly through clouds. And I don't even know how to, I don't have words to explain it. It's like, I mean, it's still a rush when I land. I always shake. But like, when I'm up there, it's just like, it's tranquil. It's like, you know, like you hear the wind, but you don't think of anything. It's just, it's pretty cool.
What was your first jump?
What was my first jump?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I really just wanted to get that Instagram shot, like of me flying through the sky. Like, that's all I wanted. And then I did the one jump and I was hooked. I was like, wow, this is what I want to do. And then I thought about the Daredevil character at that time. And I actually filmed a bunch of stuff, like, you know, like snowboarding. I told myself how to do a backflip on a motorcycle, like a motocross bike. I did some I got some surfing shots, some base jumping, wingsuiting, skydiving, all those extreme sports. And that's how the Daredevil character came around. And
I
actually showed Vince this clip, and after two or three minutes of me like almost killing myself, he looked at me and he's like, I didn't know you can juggle. there was a clip of me like juggling these fireballs, and that's what stood out
that
to
was
like,
what got
yeah.
We got a juggler.
Suddenly you have a juggler gimmick instead of
a juggler.
It's like, it was fireballs, but like, yeah.
I had read something about a fireball mishap in a match or something a long time ago. Is that true, or is that
yes? Wow, I actually found that clip the other day. I'll post it on my social media today,
like
tomorrow,
to
or this week. Yeah, the guy, I don't know if you guys know how the fireballs work that the magicians use. Yeah, that's just flash paper.
Yeah.
But you have to still light it.
Okay.
So we had the spot in the match where the guy was going to throw it at me, but he couldn't light it. So I was just going to go and give him another shot, you know, so he had more time to sell between the spot. And I guess as I grabbed him, he got it, and then the fireball got me. Like, it burned me pretty bad. Like the beard and the hair, you can smell it.
But, yeah.
I didn't have any, like, bad skin burns, luckily.
Oh, that's good. That's what they're there for, I guess. Yeah, might be eyebrowless for a couple weeks, but...
So let me ask you this. Was this before Hogan and Warrior tried it?
What year was that?
I think that was, like, 99, 2000. Oh, yeah, 2000.
It was way after that. I think this was 2003, 4.
Because you started pretty young, though, in wrestling. Though, yeah. Right?
15, 16, I had my first match, but I started refereeing matches when I was, like, 11.
Oh, my gosh.
Holy wow. smokes.
Yeah. I would love to see an 11-year-old referee.
Yeah, me too.
Watch out, Marty.
I was so scared. I was even more scared for that than I was for my actual first match.
Oh, yeah?
Like, because it was, like, on the spot. Like, my dad was like, get in there right now. I was like, oh, I don't know anything. He goes, you can count to three, right? He's like, just go.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. It's not that easy.
And that's exactly how promoters... Still, to this day, take it. Oh, that kid can count to three. We don't need to bring in Marty. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that was my introduction to the business, too.
Amen. Like.
That sounds about right, though. I mean,
trial by fire, man. Just throw you in the deep end, right?
Right. That's how my dad told me how to swim, too. He just threw me into the pool. He's like, there you go. So, like,
sort it out.
Yep. True story. Well, that's how I learned to swim.
And he trained you to wrestle, or who trained you?
My dad trained me, a couple of other guys. So my dad had a school, but there was laws in South Africa at the time. You needed to be 18 to train or do a professional sport.
I see, okay.
Oh, God, so I thought he needed to be white. That was a problem
for me. Jesus.
So I was like 15 when I started training, so I wrestled. I had a mask with like this wig, it's long hair, and I had this full body suit on so no one would know it was me.
Oh, I see,
so,
yeah.
You know, like wrestling full-time on weekends. I wrestled like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Monday I'd get to school, none of my homework was done. I had all these bruises everywhere and like other people's makeup and tan all over me. You know, but I couldn't tell any of the other kids.
Well, what lie do you come up with at that point?
Oh man, I forgot half the lies I came up with.
So let me ask you this, who was your first match and who went over?
It was my dad. It was a tradition in South Africa. My dad was like the fifth Finney of South Africa. Like everyone's first match was against him. If you speak to Adam Rose, if you speak to any of the South Africans that you know or will meet in the future, their first match was always against him. He was like, he was legit like a hooker. Like you get the shooter and then you get the hooker. For the wrestling fans who know the terms.
But not a hooker that you might otherwise.
Yeah. I remember too, the stadium that it happened in was the Westridge Tennis Stadium in Durban. And when WWE travels there, they still go to that building. It's a piece of shit, the building.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's got
I've been there.
Yeah. So it's got so much history. Like it was unreal. I remember the match too. My dad said I could go over. He's like, yeah, just hit me with that cool moonsault you do, that springboard moonsault I still do till this day.
Uh-huh.
And I remember doing it, and he caught me, and I just power slammed me, and he's like, kick out. And I just couldn't kick out. I was so winded. Like, I just stayed down. It was a boxing ring, too. Like,
oh, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, every time we go there, like Taker, like Taker's one of his first five matches was in that building.
What?
So yeah, so like that's got a lot of history, man. It's unreal. Like so, like he asks me every time. He's like, "Is it still the same?" Even Finley and Regal, they know that building so well. And they're like, "Is it still the same?" I'm like, "It's exactly the same. They haven't even painted it or anything yet."
Wow. Yeah.
So what's the scene like in South Africa for wrestling?
Right now, it's trying to make a comeback. Not many people know this. In the 80s, 90s, it was like. It was like unofficial territory. Like when I was a kid, I saw Hogan job to our champion all the time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but there was no YouTube back then or internet, right. So no one knew that.
So there was no side effect from
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Interesting.
So like as a kid, I saw Hogan and Andre in that same arena, actually. And then, in the late 90s, my dad died in 99. And kind of everyone thought I was going to take over the company and run wrestling in South Africa, and I was like, I want to be a wrestler, I want to get signed. That was my first goal, so I kind of just like packed a backpack and left. Like my family was mad at me for years, and the wrestling kind of like died down, and then a few guys started it up, and they had a TV show for a while, which I was on, which I got a lot of footage, and that I kept sending to the WWE, and that's how I got signed.
Uh-huh.
But they kind of lost that deal again, and they got it again, and like they're working on it right now, so it's looking good, because there's so many like good wrestlers out there, especially on the indies right now, you know, like, so guys like that can help build up territories like that.
Yeah. You know, like, let me ask you this. Would you ever think about going back and continuing what your dad started?
Good question. I think about that a lot, actually. I think about that a lot, especially now that I see the state. South Africa is always like 10 years behind the rest of the world. So I'm thinking where what the U.S. was like 10 years ago. So I feel like wrestling is making – I mean, wrestling is huge right now. Like NXT has an awesome slot on TV. WWE Superstars is actually the biggest, the highest rated show in Africa.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
A lot of the African countries, they don't speak English, you know, so they don't understand those raw, like those 30-minute promo segments. They see the matches. Everyone understands matches, you know. So that's like NXT and the Superstars. Those are the big shows in Africa. They're definitely a big market. Like TNA or GWF is on there right now, and like they're getting like New Japan stuff and hopefully Lucha soon. So like there's definitely a market for it. So it's a possibility. I made contact with Adam Rose. I was like, well, we should just go open a wrestling school there. Because, I mean, I know kids want to train, but they don't know where to go. So that's definitely a possibility in the next few years.
Oh, very cool.
And so when did you realize that, it sounds like pretty much from the get-go, that you wanted this as a career?
Yeah, yeah. I was 8 years old. I remember playing remember the Raw game on Sega?
Yeah.
I played that, and I was like, I turned around to my friend. I was like, that's what I'm going to do one day. Like, I knew. And I didn't quit. There was like a few times which I was like, yeah, there's no way I can make this. But I was like, you know what? I'm gonna die trying. Die.
And it just wasn't really possible from South Africa. So did you head to the UK or where did you go?
UK. I went to school. I lived in UK for 5 years because I figured that the wrestling scene there was like up and coming. It wasn't. It only started like when I left. But at least I got to meet some people and like I got to like train every day and do shows and stuff like that. My mom, God bless her, I love her, but like she was the one actually. She told me when I was young, she's like, "There's no way you're gonna make it." Like and her reasoning was, she goes, "No South African has ever made it," and I was like, "Well, exactly. So I can be the first one,
right?"
You know, like now she's the biggest wrestling fan in the world.
Good. Nice. I mean, you were the first South African signed to WWE, correct?
Yes, real South African. Like I know they had like some South African characters, like
right. Yeah.
You kind of have to shoot be real.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kofi Kingston turns out not.
People still ask me. They're like, "Are you really from South Africa?" Like,
it is confusing. I mean, they do because they make up stuff like Kofi Kingston so often. Yeah. Like, but
that's true, I guess. Just listen to me speak. Like, I don't sound American or Japanese. Or
anything. That's true. It's a hard accent to fake. I feel as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. I'm sorry, Dale. That's the thing with your accent. I mean, it's not an English accent. It's not an Australian one. It's a South African accent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
pretty
the dialect.
Much. Yeah,
you can tell.
So, what's some of your favorite spots to wrestle then? Not company wise, but just globally speaking.
Just like cities.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so many. I mean, recently, just before the South African trip. Just before this happened, I stopped in Dubai, and it actually looks like Dubai scene is actually up and coming.
It
actually looks pretty cool.
I know WWE started going there maybe a few years ago.
Yeah, funny. Well. So I did a couple of skydives there on the Palm. I don't know if you guys ever seen online the Palm. So I jumped over the Palm, and I just saw like there was like fireworks, and there was like a big concert going on there. And as I landed, they were like, "Oh yeah, Justin Bieber's in town." But right next to that, the WWE was holding tryouts the same day. It was so random, but I didn't realize anyone was in town. And when I got to my hotel, I was like, "Oh, the boys are in town." So I started texting all the guys, you know, like Baldo, like the head trainer, and like Norman Smiley, and guys like that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, "Oh yeah, but we have a flight tonight." It was so random.
Yeah, they don't give them a lot of time.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of cities like that. Like I've been working on Brazil, like a lot of South American countries actually.
Okay.
Yeah, Portugal, like Spain, all those countries that you never think.
I saw a lot of when the Hardys were wrestling the Young Bucks. There were a lot of that South American stuff. They were just getting hot crowds down there.
Yep. Chile's hot right now.
Yeah.
Brazil, I think, will in the next 5 years or so be pretty big.
Interesting.
South America is like what I have my eye on right now.
Uh-huh.
Taking that salsa lessons and Spanish lessons right now.
I know.
You can get some help at Lucha, I'm sure, maybe.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How's your run at Lucha Underground been?
Oh, so fun. Like, I've been wrestling since I was 14, 15, and this is the most fun I've ever had in wrestling.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's super fun. Like, the team is great. Everyone's so fun to hang around with. You know, like, everyone, like, bounces ideas off each other. Like, it's really a fun place.
Now, is that the entire roster you feel? Or, I mean, you've got your nice little group going on with Worldwide Underground. So
yeah, that's been super fun. But, like, the whole roster, like, everyone's nice and, like, everyone's super talented there, you know, like, from the referees to even the backstage people. Even, like, the people who's never, like, even, like, watched wrestling or seen wrestling, they become wrestling fans because of the show, which is, like, that to me, that's so great.
Yeah, I guess in a TV production, there's a lot of people who come just because they're part of production.
Exactly.
So they didn't have to know anything about wrestling.
It was funny, like my first week there, this one guy comes up to me and he's like, wow, you guys did all those stunts in one take. Because like, you know, in Hollywood we do like hundreds and hundreds of takes.
Right.
But to me that was like so cool. Like I was like, yeah, I do this every day.
Dude, that's kind of my life, but thank you. It is amazing. Thank you for noticing. Now, had you crossed paths with Johnny in WWE?
Not in a singles match. Like, possibly, like, some eight-man tags, or maybe, like, Royal Rumble.
But you were there at the same time for part of it?
Yes. Like, maybe a year and a half-ish.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he seems like a fun guy to
Oh, he's awesome. And he's doing some great work right now, I think. I feel like he's doing the best work of his life. He's amazing. He's, like...
He just keeps growing, I feel
He keeps growing. Like, he just learns new stuff every week. Mm-hmm. He's in great shape. He looks like he's 21. Like,
getting in movies and doing
right?
all kinds
movies,
of things.
Doing his own thing. And, you know, and he's a good person. Like, people like that become kind of like dicks. But he's a good human. I know we play the bad guys on TV, but we're actually nice guys.
You wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being one, but that's cool.
Right.
I mean, you've been in lots of factions, I guess, for a lot of your career. Do you like... that kind of group mentality to have, like, guys that you're working with constantly, or are you, like, solo better?
I do. I like both. The group thing is cool because you can, like, bounce ideas off each other, and you can, like, in the ring, you can feed off people. Like, perfect example right now, like, me tagging with Jack Evans.
Uh-huh.
It's so much fun. Like, I watch this kid in the ring, and I stand on the apron, and I was like, does anyone see this guy? Like, to me, he's, like, one of the best right now. Just, like, character-wise. I mean, we all know he can do any move on the planet.
Yes, it seems like it.
Character-wise, like, he's evolved so much. And, like, that's cool to me because it makes me want to up my game. You know, I'm standing on the apron. I'm thinking of stuff I want to do. So I feed off him. And, like, you know, like, I feel like the fans can tell that, too. Like, my last year in WWE, like, all the house shows I'll be doing, it's just kind of like going through the motions because every weekend is exactly the same. And I feel like fans, they can't pinpoint it exactly, but they know. They're like, oh, something was off in that match. You know, something was weird. So, like, yeah, definitely working with guys so I can get – I feel like I get better when I work with other guys. You can always evolve in wrestling. That's what's cool. Like, before Eddie Guerrero died, he told me that he every day he learned something new. And to me, he was one of the best, for sure, by far. When it comes to, like, in-ring stuff and the whole package, really. And, to hear him say that, I was like, yeah, that's so true. You do learn. Even if you wrestle someone terrible or even if you wrestle someone good, you always learn something new.
So you're in FCW for a little while, and then things kind of popped off with the Nexus. What did you expect? Because that Nexus was hot.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you guys think going into it? Like, did you even have a relationship with those guys? I mean, I know they're all down there, but...
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I was in FCW with those guys. Those guys are just, like, legit my best friends in the business.
Oh, great.
Right.
That's
now,
great.
And I still keep in contact with all of them. We didn't know how big it was going to be. We had no idea. You know, like, usually in wrestling, everything has already been done before or just a variation. And I feel like Nexus was kind of fresh and new at the time. So, like, we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know how to do it. We didn't know how to handle it. We're like, so what do you guys really want from us? Like, we just took the ball and ran with it. And we all know what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, there's so many good Nexus memories for me, and I feel like in different iterations of it even as well. When they switched it to, like, CM Punk being a part of it, I mean, did that change the way that you guys worked together, or was that still
a little bit? Yeah, like, we didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, there was a very pivotal point in the company backstage at that time. I won't go too much in depth on that, but so we really didn't know what was going to happen. We were just, like, still trying to have fun and trying to, you know, like, get the faction over. I mean, it didn't even last a whole year now that I think about it. Like, we didn't even get a WrestleMania moment.
Was it not?
No.
No.
Because we didn't even make it to Mania.
Oh, yeah, because it was a SummerSlam.
Yeah.
SummerSlam thing.
Yeah, and SummerSlam, speaking of SummerSlam, I know that Jericho and Edge have been on record talking about, you know, pushing for you guys to go over.
Yeah.
And apparently something got changed and everything, and I know there's been a lot of hearsay and stuff that's been said from people who weren't there.
Yeah.
What was your perspective on that?
So we knew we had to go over, and we wanted to, but we didn't know how to, like, being rookies, we didn't know how to express that at the time. Like, we didn't want to come off as, like, arrogant and, like, you know, like how guys are when they get a push when they're new in the industry. We didn't want to come off like that. And obviously we lost the battle, and the person who got it reversed, Edge and Christian actually told him that day and the next day, like, you're wrong. He actually apologized. That was one of the few times that I heard him apologize. He's like, yeah, you guys were right. We should have done it that way. But it was too late.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, at least he realized it and signified it to you. That's at least something.
Exactly,
that's nice.
Exactly.
in this industry, I feel like there's not a lot of that even.
No, you're absolutely right.
So let's talk about the core then. After that, did get a mania moment.
Yeah.
But it was very, very short.
Yeah.
What for me, so just for me as a fan, I was very mad at that match. I mean, what did you guys think of the way that, I mean, it's like, A, you're on the card, I guess, right? But
yeah, so the problem is with live TV, Marty can tell you this stuff, like segments run long, especially promo segments, and like a lot of things happen, so time get cut, and that happens with Raw all the time. That's why like the match quality is so much worse on Raw than any other show. Well, SmackDown now too, actually. But like when segments go long or stuff change, like sometimes you get added a minute, sometimes you get taken away a minute. So that match, I think initially we had like 15 or 20 minutes, and then it was like 12, and then it was 11, 10, 9, and then eventually it was 1. So in a way, it was cool because like I didn't have to stress out about anything. I was like, okay, I don't have to remember any spots. I don't have to do anything. I'm just going to like walk out with – we were still tag champs, me and Heath at the time. And it was the first time my mom came to see me wrestle live.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
wow.
That was kind of cool. So I was just like focusing on the entrance really. Like, but I mean, stuff like that happens. Yeah, it kind of like sucks. But yeah, that's the business, unfortunately.
So that was a day of kind of thing.
Oh, that was like – 5 minutes before.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Up in Gorilla, where they're changing your time.
Yep.
That's crazy.
I mean, we kind of knew it was going to happen, so like, we didn't even like rehearse anything, or like, we probably figured like it was going to happen to our match. If you look at the card, normally you can tell like this is going to happen to us.
When it goes down, yeah. Who's it going down on? Yeah, I see. And so you said you keep up with the guys. How's Stu Bennett doing?
He's great. He just flew to LA. He's here today.
Oh, nice.
He's staying in Burbank. Yeah, because I text him and he's like, yeah, I'm going to – yeah, a bunch of the boys are obviously here because the hurricane in Florida.
Right.
So a bunch of the guys are here because I think Raw's here on Monday in Anaheim.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a bunch of the guys are in town and, like, yeah, I speak to them quite often. So
he's cool. He's another guy that I felt like that – I mean, I'm hoping that he kind of comes back to wrestling.
I think he will. Yeah. You know, like he every time I ask him, I was like, hey, let's do this. And he's like, nah, I'm not ready yet.
Okay.
But like the way he says it, it's going to happen, I think.
Excellent. I like that news. would you have guessed that Heath Slater would be the longest standing, last man standing of the Nexus?
Yes and no. He's like one of those guys that he'll be around forever. I mean, you can put him in a match against anybody, he'll have a good match. You can put him in any promo segment, he can be entertaining, he can be funny, he can be aggressive, he can do it all. He's probably got the best deal out of all of us right now because, like, you know, like the guys backstage, they like guys like that. You can plug him into any storyline, into any segment, and he'll do good. So, in a way, I know, and he's a hard worker and a loyal guy and trustworthy, and like, you know, he does his job, he never complains. So, like, I feel like, in a way, WWE rewards guys like that.
Interesting.
Sometimes,
yeah.
I mean, think about it. Like, if you watch guys like JBL, who's been there like for centuries. Like WWE eventually like gives you a little bit something.
Yeah, they do. It's funny because I remember Heath when he came in down to Deep South. I mean, he was greener than green, and you know, he had some experience, but he went down there and you know, he really, you know, stepped up his game.
Oh yeah.
Same thing with Kofi and those guys when they went down there.
Yep. And he's just a good country boy, you know?
Like
he just loves wrestling, he just loves to have a good time. And the character you see on TV, that's pretty much him.
Very loose.
Yep.
So what's the future hold for you then? I mean, we've got to get through this injury. What's your recovery time looking like?
So it's been 14 weeks. I just started walking this week without crutches.
Oh,
so that's
gosh.
Like, this is like a big step. Like, I was super depressed the last 14 weeks. I was like, oh man, this is never going to happen. At least now that I can walk. I mean, I still have a long way to go, but at least I'm like, okay, I can see the finish line. So I just got to keep doing my rehab and stuff. I mean, my goal was to be in the best shape of my life this year. For some reason, I planned this like years ago. I don't know. I said to myself, when I turn 37, you know, I look at guys like Chris Jericho, who, like, you know, is way older, but he looks fantastic. He's doing great work right now. And I'm going to do it as long as my body will allow me to do it. You know, like, I'm not going to push through any aches or pains if something happens to my leg again. That's, you know, but like, only time will tell. You know, like, I want to have one more big run. That's what I want. I mean, right now in Lucha 2, I don't know what's going to happen, but like, the potential is there for the show to blow up. You know? And I want to make an impact there for sure. And I just want to do as many shows around the world as possible. There's so much talent out there, like on the independents, like all these young kids that are wrestling. I want to teach them what I've learned, and you know, just help them out, and just work as many people as I can.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a great goal. I think especially if South Africa could be a place that you know. And so how often are you going back there then?
Not often enough. Like when this happened, I did that tour there. And maybe last year, I think I did a tour there. But other than that, it's like WWE only toured there every 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Yeah, so I went there twice with WWE. And,
I really love that package that they did when you, I guess you were kind of doing a singles run, and they had, it was like you in South Africa and all. That was such a cool video package.
Yeah, I just actually just uploaded on onto my YouTube channel too.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool.
I found that. It was a good skit. That was like, I think Core was just about to be done.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact
time. I didn't even have singles music yet. It was so weird too, because like I came out and I was like, yeah, in my hometown. I was like, oh, listen to this pop. And no one knew the music, so everyone's like, huh? And obviously when I came out, then they're like, oh, yay.
It's him.
But 2 years later, we went back to that same, so my hometown, I think we sold out the venue like within like an hour, so that we had two shows back to back.
Wow.
And that was cool. That was like, probably the best experience of my life. That was my mania. Like, you know, I got to the back and all the agents were like, whoa. that was a good feeling.
So let me ask you, did they put you over in your hometown?
I think so, yeah. I think it started out, I can't even remember the matches I had. I think I had like two matches too, because you know, like something that starts out as a tag and then it breaks up, or something that starts out as a single match and two heels run in and there was a tag. So yeah, I got some exposure there for sure. Oh, actually the one time it was like an 8-man tag. It was like me, Christian, Big Show, Randy, and I remember this. So there's like 15,000 people, one of the biggest stadiums in South Africa. It's called the Dome, and the whole crowd started going, PJ Black, PJ Black. Because I was PJ Black on the Indies since I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So people there know me as PJ Black, and Randy goes, like, who are they yelling for? Like, so like on the apron, I had to like catch him up. Like.
South African history right here, brother.
Yeah, I'm kind of a big deal. You know?
That was good.
You said that was Randy that I said?
Yeah.
That sounds like a Randy.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Did you have to adjust your style much for Lucha Underground, or is it pretty much you came in as you were?
I had to adjust a little bit because I had to go back and do all the stuff that they took away from me in WWE. But I feel like there's so many good guys. Like everyone's a high flyer these days, so like I'm constantly evolving and changing up my style. I'm trying to be like a Fit Finley, like a brawler, more submission style wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still doing my 450 and all the high flying stuff, but I'm going to be more selective by doing that. You know, so when I do it, people are like, oh shit, you still got it. I was actually at a show before I got injured, and this little kid runs up to me and he's like, hey man, you still got it. I'm like, I've never lost it, but thanks.
Hey, you know, speaking of matches, is there anybody on your bucket list that you haven't worked that you want to work?
Yes, Okada for sure.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. And I mean, I know he's been doing great and he's like number one in the PW 500, but this goes back way before that. Like I've been wanting to wrestle him for years, like way before even like he broke out in New Japan. I mean, he had that stint in TNA that was terrible, and then he kind of like went back to Japan, and that's when in that era when he moved back, I was like, yeah, I want to really work this guy. Who knows, it can still happen.
Did you wrestle much in Japan?
Just with the WWE.
Okay.
Yeah, just the WWE tours. So,
and what was the GFW stint? It was very brief for you. What was your experience like over there?
I mean, I liked it. Jeff was cool. I mean, he loved my ideas. He let me be me.
Nice.
I mean, on the show, I cut a lot of promos because like that never used to be my strong point, but like I love doing them. I love doing them. And then he let me cut a promo on every show, which made me better and was great. He was like, you're gonna be my top heel, kid. Like he saw me be a heel one day against the Bullet Club. And he's like, you should never be a babyface ever again. And like, yeah, so he just believed in me. So it was kind of cool. I enjoyed it, you know. But like when Lucha came around, I didn't have a deal with Jeff. And I was a champion at the time, but he couldn't like sign me to a contract.
Yeah,
so
they weren't
like,
doing a lot of deals with anybody. Really,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I mean, if Global Force maybe had a TV deal or something in the works, then I probably would have stayed. But like I knew something wasn't going to happen in the next year or so. So I was like, let me go do this Lucha thing. The Lucha actually called me for the first season, by the way, and that was just when I left WWE. And I remember they called me on the 10th of it was the 10th of October or something. And I was just finished. I was like, yeah, I'm not signing with anybody, like ROH or TNA. I'm not signing with anybody. I'm just doing my own thing for a while. And I had never heard of Lucha Underground at the time, too.
Right.
And then obviously when the first season started airing, I was like, oh, how did I say no to this? And apparently I said to him on the phone, I was like, call me in a year. Maybe we can talk. He called me on the day. He called me the 10th of October, a year later. And then I think I started on the 14th.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very rare, I feel, for people to be on that. Like, right? He set his Apple alert.
Right.
PJ Black.
Yeah. Got it. I'm on negotiating power.
And when you say the WWE took some things away from you, now, it's, when they do that kind of thing, is that for safety because you're on the road a lot? Or what is generally the motivation for that?
It's different reasons for different people. They didn't so much like take it away from me and go, hey, don't do that. It was more like, this is the time you're given, this is the story we need to tell, and you're the first match on the card. So I'm not going to do like an outside dive shooting star press in the first match, because like obviously matches has to tell stories, but on a WWE card, the whole card has to tell a story.
Right. You want
to
blow them up too early.
Exactly. So I didn't want to be that guy, because in developmental, a bunch of guys got fired for doing that.
Actually. Oh, I see.
So I wanted my job at the time. So I was like, I figured like once I get to a certain point, like doing like main event matches and stuff like that, then I can be me again. But it just never got to that.
Are you able to ask the doctor, like, can I do a 450 once this heals up?
Oh, you know, I'm definitely going to do it.
No matter what they say.
I've been doing that move since I was like 6 years old. So
Ginger,
like,
the kid, he still has it.
Yeah. A kid telling a kid, that's tremendous. Right.
I do love that move, though. Man, it is a thing of beauty.
Thank you.
To see. All right, well, great. Is there anything that we can put over for you, or what are you in the interim besides Lucha Underground? What else are you working on? Anything we can help with?
Just working on that YouTube channel right now.
Okay.
YouTube.com/PJBlack450.
Okay.
I'm working on some stop motion animations, and I've uploaded a bunch of my base jumping stuff. There's a ton of stuff on there. And I'm pretty active on social media because I just sit at home a lot these days. So, like, yeah, everything's on my website, too. If you want any of my social media or my email links and stuff, it's on pjblack.com.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming in today. This has been super great.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. I've had a great time, seriously.
It was fun, dude.
Marty, you want to put yourself over?
Yeah, my Twitter, at MartyElias1967, Instagram at MartyElias67, and on Facebook, good old Marty Elias.
Nice.
There you go. I keep thinking this is vodka, by the way. I'm very disappointed.
Very, yeah. We do not have. I have Diet Coke, if that helps you. It's probably got as many chemicals as vodka. It's not as fun. Kia?
Kia Stevens. Twitter, Mean Queen K. Instagram, Spinning Fist.
And I am The Walking Dale on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow us at facebook.com/ringsidepop or Instagram ringsidepop. And thank you so much for joining us today. We will see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Dale Rutledge, and Stephen Lemieux, managing producer for AfterBuzz Wrestling, Mark Donica, and the entire Ringside Pop staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in. Like us on Facebook, rate and comment on iTunes and YouTube. Follow the show on Twitter at Ringside Pop. This has been a presentation of the AfterBuzz TV Network. Buzz you later!